hour number two of the Blitz. It starts right now. 1340 AM, 105.7 FM, live in your Fan Run Radio app. It's free wherever you get your apps. We're also live in the Fan Run Radio web browser. And if you want to watch that video feed, well, it's over on the Fan Run Radio Twitter. Let's get hour two started with an opening drive. All right, first down. Tennessee Titans have signed another player. Sean Murphy Bunting, 25-year-old Super Bowl winning corner and former Tampa Bay Buccaneer, has signed a 1-year deal worth up to $5 million with the Tennessee Titans. That is contract details being reported by Jordan Schultz of Schultz Report. Still waiting on the full details of the contract, but Titans adding some young talent into that receiving room, or I mean into that corner room. They got a new corners coach this offseason, Chris Harris. I think a name that's really well respected in the industry. I mean, he almost got a defensive coordinator gig. So Chris Harris is going to get a lot of young talent to work with. Tennessee's corner room, Christian Fulton, 24. In my opinion, one of the most underrated corners in the game. Roger McCreary was all right as a rookie last year, showed flashes. Elijah Molden has started games as a rookie. He's 24. Sean Murphy Bunting, the oldest of the bunch at 25. And then you also have 25-year-old, UDFA Trey Avery that started for you at times last year. That can be a depth piece. And even Caleb Farley is still on the roster. Maybe he can still find a way to contribute with a new coach and a fresh start. But I love this signing. I am a huge, huge Sean Murphy Bunting guy. I really liked him coming out of the draft. I liked him in Tampa Bay. I thought he was incredibly underrated. I thought that he was the best, potentially the best corner out there on the market. Adds much needed speed, I think, in the slot for Tennessee. It's been an issue lately. It felt like some of our slot corners were just not quite quick enough at times to keep up with some of these shiftier guys the team's been putting in the slot these days. The other thing it does for Tennessee, we talked about this last week. You're setting yourself up to be able to draft luxury picks with your premium picks. Coming into the offseason, it felt like Tennessee was going to have to address a couple of positions, starting positions in the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
Across the offensive line, you needed pieces. You needed an edge rusher. You needed a corner. I think you still need a wide receiver.
For sure.
Which that market is just now starting to heat up, so I still think you're probably going to give the same approach to what you've done to these other positions and sign a value wide receiver. But Tennessee's done a good job getting these guys on 1 or 2 year deals that are still somewhat young, relatively cheap, and have high upside. Sean Murphy Bunting, Arden Key, the linebacker from San Francisco with a name who I have a hard time pronouncing.
Azeez Al-Shaair.
Yes, Azeez Al-Shaair. Dan Brunskill, like quality signings for the Titans. Mm-hmm. Andre Dillard too, I think with a career reset could turn out to be a pretty good tackle.
I would have thrown $2.5 million at Mac Hollins.
Is that just the watching him
against the Titans
abuse Terrence Mitchell for a game and you talking though? Because he wasn't really all that impressive.
He was somewhat all right.
Like there are just other guys I like better.
Like a wide receiver 3. I guess we signed Brad Nick Westbrook.
Got him for pretty much the veteran men too.
We did, yeah.
Just a little bit above.
Pretty much, yeah.
I still want to get DJ Chark.
Yeah.
But for the Titans, you've addressed corner with Murphy Bunting. You've addressed the offensive line with Brunskill and with Andre Dillard. You've addressed that edge rusher spot with Arden Key. So now at pick 11, I still think you're more likely than not to go tackle or to trade back. But with pick 11 and then with your 11th pick in the second round too, you're not tied to positions anymore. You're not forced to take one of those two or three spots. So if there's a really talented player available at 11 that you really like, and it's not necessarily your biggest position of need, what you've done in free agency is set yourself up to be able to take that guy. You know, same goes for round two. Nothing really flashy from the Titans, but I've been impressed with Rand Carthon and some of these signings.
I think it's a very good strategy that they're doing right now. They've stripped it down to the foundation a little bit more, gotten rid of the bad contracts, signed some valuable veterans to short deals and kind of prove it, 1 year, two year deals type of thing. And then you got a lot of cap space next year, so you can kind of go from there. So I agree. I like what Rand's doing. Second down here, United States advances to the world's most meaningless final.
What?
Everyone's just on Twitter, talking about how the WBC is meaningless. Not everyone. But people complain about Edwin Diaz getting hurt and Jose Altuve getting hurt.
I think it's just Mets fans.
I think it is just Mets fans. I think you're just hurt, guys.
You wonder who's clapped back at Mets fans? Mets players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we're playing for our country.
I mean, I think that the World Baseball Classic has been an outstanding
event. Awesome. Awesome.
The crowds have been awesome. The emotion has been unmatched. It's kicking the MLB's ass.
1,000%. 1,000%.
And I think it almost even raises the interesting question, like, nobody's having an issue with the game length in the WBC.
It's the experience of the game.
Is the issue in the MLB, A, just the games seem kind of dry, but then B, just 162 games too many?
Yeah. Does the passion just fade out a little bit over the season?
Honestly,
you're playing 162 games. I get it.
I think that's something that really needs to be discussed further at some point. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to, like, break tradition or change anything too much. But at the same time, if you want to have a conversation about shrinking the MLB schedule down, it would make games matter more. I think it would help the intensity of the games. It could help player health.
You don't have to, like, destroy the season. Make it, like, 120 or 130. Like, just knock it down by
100.
Yeah, drop it down by, maybe 30, 40, I don't know. If you want to go 60 games, sure. That's a lot of games. 60's a lot of games.
Something that can never happen, I saw written about in a magazine one time, like 10 years ago. And it was just experimental, like thought exercise. Obviously, it's not really a call to make this happen. And I'm not necessarily calling to do this either. I love the MLB. I love everything about it. Like, I'm going to watch 100-plus Nationals games this year. Please pray for me. But I saw the idea of, like, what if you set up the MLB schedule like the NFL schedule? 18 weeks, one series a weekend. Three starting pitchers.
I don't like that.
I don't like it. I'm not suggesting it. But it would be just kind of crazy to think about, like, the intensity of those series. But I just think baseball's a sport where, like, too many just finicky things can happen, where you need that large sample size to truly determine who the best teams are.
Right. It can take you a month to get hot in baseball type of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I would, if it weren't for expanding season,
you could have,
season,
like, Mike Trout batting 150. Right.
But I am, because we went from 19-31 to World Series champions. Bumpy roads, Sam. They lead to beautiful places.
Anyways, Team USA beat Cuba, dominant 14-2 win. Fell behind 1-0 in the first inning, scored 7 straight unanswered. Trey Turner, new Captain America, grand slam. Homered twice, went 3-for-5 with 4 RBIs. He's been batting 9th. The guy is just absolutely destroying the competition and the WBC so far. Hitting from that 9 spot, as I said, 10 RBIs in the tournament. He is tied for the lead with a guy on Japan I can't pronounce, but he's a Red Sox prospect. It kind of sucks that this WBC has been thrown into the same weekend as March Madness. It's not getting the same shine that it deserves. It's just unfortunate that timing is.
I mean, I don't know. I think it has still gotten a good shine. Oh, it has.
It's gotten a shine worldwide. I think maybe just in the United States, people need to watch it more.
I mean, Tuesday night should be one of those nights where everyone's tuned in, watching the same thing. Everyone's Twitter timeline looks the same.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you should be watching the WBC final on Tuesday. It should be an amazing game. Whether it's whether it's the U.S. and Mexico, and the U.S. is trying to avenge their prior loss to Mexico, where they kind of got smacked around a little bit, or whether it's the United States and Japan. Like, that's going to be a good game. I've loved the World Baseball Classic, and again, all the idiots that don't want their players playing in the WBC and, like, don't think it's a big deal, just stop talking, please. You're not right. No one agrees with you. You're just an angry Mets fan.
You just need
to look at yourself in the mirror and think, wait a minute, do I actually not like the WBC, or am I just an angry Mets fan? You're probably just an angry Mets fan.
Didn't even get hurt in the field of play. He got hurt celebrating.
Yeah. You know what happened?
So, you know what? Maybe the Mets should do another spring break or spring training celebration. Maybe
you know what happened
2 days
later? Brandon Nimmo messed up his knee sliding into second in spring training. Should we cancel that too?
Yeah. Yes. Way too dangerous for these players.
I don't even know if they should, like, lift weights or work out. I mean, Andrew Voorhees, he tore his ACL with the NFL Combine. Like, we should probably not let guys work out either. We can't let them get hurt.
Let's put them in, like, those just cryogenic chambers for, like, 4 or 5 months in the offseason and just unlock them and wake them back up again.
Injuries suck, but, like, injuries just...
It's a part of sports.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's a part of sports. It's a part of training. It's a part of life. You just got to deal with it. That's why I hate opt-outs, too, which that's an entire different conversation, but... I don't know, like, you can see Andrew Voorhees tear his ACL in the NFL Combine, but someone won't play in their bowl game. Like, you can have a freak injury at any given time. Anyway, yeah, WBC has been great. I mean, Adam Wainwright was nearly moved to tears talking about how amazing it was last night. He said that it was the single most fun he's ever had playing baseball in his life. And that's a guy that's pitched in World Series.
Yeah. Trey Turner said
the single most fun he's ever had.
Trey Turner said his grand slam last night was the second loudest thing he's heard in a baseball stadium outside of the World Series win that he's had.
Yeah.
I mean, what else do you need to hear?
It hurts seeing Trey Turner.
Yeah, it hurts. It
makes me sad.
I mean, it hurts me too, having to watch him on the Phillies.
He should have been ours forever. I love that man. Anyway. Third down. Adam Thielen is headed to Carolina. Headed to the Panthers on a 3-year deal. He'll be replacing DJ Moore. He'll be catching passes from whoever Carolina presumably drafts with the number one pick. Feels like a weird landing spot for Adam Thielen. I don't think I'd want to go there if I were Adam Thielen.
Especially on a 3-year deal.
Yeah, I would not want to commit.
Being 30 years old.
The end of my career to the Carolina Panthers. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't want to lose for 3 years because I think that's what the Panthers are headed to.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Maybe he really believes in the first pick in the draft. He gets to step right in and, like, be the leader of that receiving room. It's him, Terrence Marshall Jr., Laviska Shenault, and Shy Smith. Isn't that something? Way to surround your first overall quarterback with talent, Carolina. Hey, don't worry. If Adam Thielen's not open, Laviska Shenault probably is. Don't worry. Terrence Marshall Jr., he's burning guys out there. But, yeah, Adam Thielen, head of the Panthers. Sam, fourth down?
Fourth down. You have got... I don't know which one to pick. And then you've got good, bad, and the ugly.
Good, bad, and the ugly should be easy.
Yeah, I know. I just don't want to. I don't know which one to take here.
Take the second one.
I'm gonna take. I guess I'll just go for the other Cinderella story. Number 15, Princeton, knocked off Missouri, advanced to their first Sweet 16 since 1967. Just gotta love a good NCAA tournament feel-good story. This Princeton team's been fun to watch. Busted my brackets with them knocking off Arizona, now beating Missouri. 78-63, I mean, just handled them. They are the fourth 15 seed to advance to the Sweet 16. They join the Dunk City Florida Gulf Coast team from 2013, Oral Roberts from 2021, and now St. Peter's from 2022. 15 seeds, man, they're becoming pretty, they're getting dangerous. They're getting frisky. Write that down for a year from now.
Pick a 15 seed. I think you can legitimately just pick whatever you want these days.
Yeah.
We've officially reached the territory of just everyone's a little frisky.
I like watching the games this week with some of my buddies, I just said, you know, nobody will ever have a perfect bracket in the history of mankind. There's no chance.
I saw one of those, like, online, you know, the not legal, but kind of legal, but not legal books like Bovada and,
yeah,
like MyBookie, mm-hmm. BetOnline. BetOnline offered a future before the tournament, and it was someone to have a perfect bracket, and no was unavailable to bet on, and yes was plus 5,000.
That's not even good enough.
The worst priced thing you've ever heard.
That's the worst
odds
of all time.
That should be plus 500,000, like, yeah, minimum. That should be plus 5 million odds.
It should be like you bet a dollar to win, yeah, like 5 grand or something like that.
It should be you maybe win a dollar to win 500,000.
I mean, like,
that should be 500,000 to 1 odds.
If no one's just like randomly, you know, filled out a bracket with their dog and not been able to get a perfect bracket, like, nobody's going to be able to do it. It's just not possible. That's the beauty of it, though.
Except for me. I'm going to get a perfect bracket next year.
Yeah? I'm sure you will.
I would be in first place right now if it wasn't for 3 scratch-outs.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda. I don't want to hear it.
I scratched out Xavier and put Kennesaw State, and I initially had Xavier in the Sweet 16. I scratched out Furman and went back and put UVA, and I scratched out Missouri and went back and put Utah State, and if I would have just kept those, I would be in first. How are you looking? You got a chance still?
I'm not terrible. I kind of like went through it. I'm in 30th right now, but I have 15-30 max left. I think I absolutely need Texas to win the national title.
Is that your pick?
And then I need some luck. Yeah.
So I'm in like 49th.
I don't think I maybe be able to place like if Texas won. I don't think I could though.
I'm in like 40 plus right now, but I went through and looked. I have the most possible points remaining for any UConn winner bracket.
Okay.
And I have the second most for any Alabama bracket.
Yeah,
so,
I have...
Like, I still have in my Alabama bracket, like 7 of my Elite Eight, and in my UConn bracket, 7 of my Elite Eight.
I'm tied for, I guess, out of the Texas brackets, there's one that's better than mine, and then there's another that I would be tied for. We both have 15-30 left, and we're at 4-10. So
yeah, I mean, I think at this
I'm
point,
doing all right.
People get too caught up in like first, second, third when you look at bracket pools. You just got to look at
your max.
Champions alive and max points.
Yeah, yeah.
And then can just compare your max points to the other people that have the same champion, because that's what it's all going to come down to is who picks the right champion.
Yeah, I've still got 7 of my Elite Eight alive.
Yeah, you're chilling.
Yeah.
You're good. You're in good shape.
Yeah.
As long as Texas wins.
Mm-hmm. I love brackets, man.
They really are the best. Good opening drive. We'll be back on the other side. All right. Back here on the Blitz. 11:25 here with you for just a little bit longer. Did you watch any Impractical Jokers this weekend?
No, why?
Just wondering.
Is there like a new season or something?
I think there is, but I don't know. I
stopped watching Impractical Jokers after a while. Whoa.
I don't know.
Still had Doja Cat going.
Why? You quit watching him?
Their show's gotten significantly worse.
No, it hasn't.
Yes, it has.
No, it hasn't.
It's gotten significantly worse.
You are full
worse.
Of crap.
No, it's gotten way worse.
How?
Since what's his name? Joe?
You don't even know his name.
Joe left.
Told me that it got...
Ever since Joe Gatto left, it's been
terrible.
Like,
I miss Joe, but the show is still great.
No, they just don't have chemistry anymore.
Yes, they do. The Jokers are still the Jokers.
It's also just not, like... things were just funnier back then, you know? Like,
no, it's still just the best. It's the best show.
It's just a little dry now. They've been doing it for too long.
Reseeded the bracket over on ESPN because that's something we always do for some reason when the Sweet 16 rolls around.
Mm-hmm.
You want to try to guess what he's got as his 4-1 seeds now?
He's probably got, like, Princeton over Tennessee.
His number one overall seed, no surprise, Alabama. Second overall seed, maybe somewhat of a surprise, but still probably not, Houston. And then the teams that made the jump to third and fourth. You want to try to guess who third is?
UConn?
UCLA.
Okay.
UCLA 3 and actually Texas 4.
Wow.
So that's who he has as his one seeds now. His two seeds right behind him is where you have UConn as the fifth best team.
UConn looks good, man.
And then how do you think he sorts out after UConn? When you have Tennessee and Gonzaga, you have Kansas State, Xavier, Creighton, Arkansas, Miami, San Diego State. Who do you think he has as his other three two seeds?
Does he have Texas as a one?
Yeah.
Okay.
He has Texas as the final one, and then UConn as the first two. Three more two seeds.
Kansas State, I would say.
He has them as the final two seed.
Okay. Creighton?
He has Creighton as the 10th best team overall.
Oh, really?
Yeah, surprisingly enough.
Tennessee.
That's right. Yeah, he has Tennessee as...
Let's go.
As the sixth best team in the field, which lines up with KenPom. KenPom has Tennessee also as the sixth best team remaining in the field. That would put Tennessee as the best team left in the East. Analytics tend to agree. Like, you're going to go into Madison Square Garden as, on paper, the best team remaining. You know, Keontae and Marquise Knoll, like, that team to me maybe still possibly better than Tennessee, but from a numbers perspective, yeah, Tennessee, sixth best team left in the tournament. He has this to say: long before strength and conditioning programs in college basketball became trendy, Rick Barnes had committed to developing an unmatched level of physicality within his programs. Ranked first in adjusted defensive efficiency on KenPom, Tennessee's Braun contributed to a 65-52 second-round win over Duke, who had won 10 games in a row, and it's the program's seventh trip to the Sweet 16 since 2000. Duke, a top-10 offensive rebounding team in America, secured just 21% of its second-chance opportunities, and Olivier Kamwan bullied the Blue Devils, especially in the second half. Turnovers have been an issue following Zakai Ziegler's season-ending injury, but the Vols committed just 9 against Duke. And if this plodding, imposing defensive juggernaut continues to play a prudent brand of basketball, Barnes could reach the Elite Eight for the first time since 2007 when he was at Texas. It's probably the kindest thing that Myron Metcalf has ever said about Tennessee.
Yeah.
Weird to see him there. Weird to see him, you know, being so nice. He has Gonzaga 7, Kansas State 8. Xavier 9, Creighton 10, Arkansas 11, San Diego State 12, Miami 13, Michigan State 14. And then this is where I have some issues with Myron.
Mm-hmm.
Princeton 15, FAU 16. Excuse me? Huh? What? We're putting the 15 seed ahead of...
The team that's been ranked this year?
The team that won 30-plus games, that's been ranked this year? John L. Davis... I mean, if you want to go off the turnover performance, like, or, I mean, tournament performance, like, John L. Davis is averaging 20.5 a game in the NCAA tournament and just turned in a stat line that's one of the best in tournament history. 5 steals, 5 assists... double-double on points and rebounds. He says, sometimes the NCAA tournament is about the fortuitous developments that pave way to the second weekend. This happened for FAU. Memphis players bickered in the final minutes of the Owls' win, and instead of facing one-seed Purdue, the Owls played Fairleigh Dickinson, ranked 298th in KenPom. On their way to the first Sweet 16, Dusty May's squad registered 108.5 points per 100 possessions and just 16 turnovers. And John L. Davis has been a gem for a team that will be cherished on its campus forever. Sure, luck helped the Owls reach the second weekend, but FAU has earned this too. Have they, if you put them behind Princeton? Like, I understand that Princeton had two impressive wins, Arizona and Missouri, and, you know, they completely dismantled Missouri. Great coaching job. They executed at a high level. I think Princeton absolutely, absolutely can show up to Louisville on Friday, and they can beat Creighton. We could absolutely see an Alabama versus Princeton Elite Eight, which is hilarious to think about. But, you know, that's something that we could see. But, I mean, FAU, again, they were one of the most behind Utah State from a metrics perspective. FAU was the most underseeded team in the country. You slap that team in a Power 5 conference, and they're probably going to be a 6 or a 7 seed.
Easy.
So to just give them the level of disrespect that Myron Metcalf just did, surprising. And also, I don't really like it since they're Tennessee's opponent. I don't need Tennessee's opponent to be disrespected.
I don't want bulletin board material.
No.
Don't give them that.
We don't need anything to balance out the karma of their
Why do you
got to
give Tennessee our flowers and then just put our opponent at the 16 seed?
But, I mean, that's just ridiculous. I don't know how you could possibly explain why FAU is the last team in the tournament if you're Metcalf, you know, left in the Sweet 16.
It's a lazy take.
I mean, I don't – let's see where are the KenPom rankings at these days? I would bet that FAU's probably a good 50, 60, 70 spots higher than Princeton at a minimum.
Princeton wasn't even like supposed to make it into the tournament.
They didn't even win the Ivy League.
Yeah.
Let's see. Looking at KenPom, Florida Atlantic, 22nd in KenPom. Any guesses where the Princeton Tigers are?
I'm going to say in the hundreds.
91.
Okay.
Two spots behind a Hofstra team that got eliminated in the NIT this weekend. And two spots ahead of a San Jose State team that was never even on the bubble.
That's absurd. That's absurd.
I mean, come on, Myron. Florida Atlantic, in my opinion, is better than Michigan State and Arkansas. I mean, Arkansas, like, you have March and Muss, and that's, for whatever reason, he's just like the heir to Tom Izzo's throne. But
hey,
FAU's a better
off.
Team.
Beware.
We just need to collectively get this in our heads now. If you're listening, whatever, wherever you are, FAU is a good basketball team. They are going to present quite a challenge come Thursday night. Don't listen to Myron Metcalf, which I don't think I had to tell you that. We all know how it's gone with Myron Metcalf in Tennessee. He's still hanging on to Konzo Martin. Shouldn't have fired Konzo. Well, I don't know. You going to get mad at Cal and Missouri too? But anyway, good, bad, and the ugly coming up next. Pretty good donut.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Oh, I'll give it to yours to you in the break. You know Jeff Goodman?
Of course.
After putting Tennessee in the 40s in his pre-tournament power rankings of the 68 teams.
I just saw that.
What?
Yeah. Keep going. Sorry.
He also said that he would need a double-digit spread to even consider betting on Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. So is he going to bet on FAU now?
Probably. Duke was a Final Four pick in 25 out of the 41 ESPN.
This was a good article. Good article here.
So funny to me. 25 out of 41. Tennessee, the biggest underdog to a lower seed, a four seed's been since 2015. Everyone just started putting Tennessee out, and Duke into the Final Four, into the Elite Eight. The second Purdue lost, everyone just immediately, oh man, Kentucky versus Duke to get to the Final Four. Now both are sitting home. Smell you later, brothers. We're chilling. Us and Mr. New York, we did our thing. Anyway, good, bad, and the ugly from the weekend. Sam, over to you first for the good.
My good, backdoor covers.
No, bad.
Nope, good.
No, bad.
I middled that line there. I finished off a parlay that had Gonzaga money line. I was doing just fine, but I also had a TCU plus 4.5. Gonzaga up 6. They just nailed down two free throws right in garbage time to secure that cover like you thought. 0.7 left on the clock. Not even enough time to get a shot in. TCU rolls the ball to half court. They don't pick it up until the logo. Damian Ba picks it up. Bang. Three-pointer. Time expires. Final, 84-81, TCU. What a cover. That's what March is all about. You know, Charlie's mad, I'm happy. That's what it's all about right there. Charlie looks so sad.
I lost everything, man. I lost every bet yesterday, and I thought that was going to be the one that I won. I was standing up. I was clapping it up after they got fouled to go to the line with 0.7 seconds left. I was celebrating like I won.
I was like walking back into my kitchen, and I was like, oh!
I didn't even see it live.
I did. It was awesome.
I'd already counted my win. Unbelievable.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I didn't need this. I didn't need this, Sam. Anyway,
we should have done a counter on how many backdoor covers happened in like the round of 64 and round of 32. That would have been a good little stat. I feel like there were a couple, don't you think?
A&M Corpus Christi. San Diego State against Furman.
Yeah, that one. That I was on the wrong side of that
one. I was on the right side of both of those. So I guess karmically I had this one coming.
I don't know.
Anyway, am I good? I mean, there's just so many ways to go here.
Yeah, I feel like it should just be good, good, good.
Good, good, good. Except there's a lot of bad and uglies.
Yeah, there is.
There's just a lot of stuff. I'll give my good, though, to San Diego State.
Shout out to Mountain West.
Really just kind of carrying the Mountain West through. The Mountain West came into this tournament, I believe, having lost like 10 straight. Hadn't been to a Sweet 16 in forever. And San Diego State took care of popular upset pick Charleston and then easily dispensed to Furman to break through the Sweet 16. They're 8-point underdogs against Alabama. That started at 5.5. It's already gone up to 8. Alabama's rolling, but I do think that San Diego State presents at least an interesting matchup for them. But shout out to the Aztecs. You know me. You know how much I love my Mountain West sports. I love Mountain West football. I love Mountain West basketball. Breaks my heart every year when the Mountain West just gets poo-pooed on in March. Never goes well. So I was glad to see San Diego State break through. I feel like they've been, I don't know, maybe the least talked about team in the entire tournament.
People wrote them off just for being in the Mountain West, but I feel like people also forgot that they're a good basketball team.
Like I can't think of any conversation I've seen nationally over the last 4 days and any of like the halftime shows, anything else where they've really talked much about San Diego State and their prospects. But again, like I would not be surprised if they gave Alabama a pretty tough game Friday night. Sam, the bad?
The bad. Michigan State knocks off Marquette yesterday, 69-60. Joey Hauser revenge game. He's got 14 points, 10 rebounds in it. Another man, though, the leading scorer for the Spartans, Tyson Walker, senior guard. They're heading to the Sweet 16. They're all happy and jolly. They're getting on the plane. They're coming back to East Lansing. They probably got people lined up outside of the buses, you know, cheering them on. Congratulations, you're going to the Sweet 16. Tyson Walker puts on Instagram, "How I get back to campus and they tow my car." You're telling me a leading scorer of the Michigan State Spartans, they get sent to the Sweet 16 and we got campus parking people coming out here and towing the guy's car at the athletic facility or something coming out of this game. He's just trying to get his boys into the Sweet 16, pull off an upset, let Tom Izzo have another little run here in March, and we got a parking ticket that you got to take care of at the end of all this thing. It's absurd. Have a little respect for the guy that just sent your school into the Sweet 16.
No. You aren't above the rules. It's because you can put a ball in a hoop. You think that you can just leave your car willy-nilly all over East Lansing? You kidding me? I hope they tow it again. I hope they tow it when he's in New York.
I just hope that they get... I only hope his car gets towed if we play them. If we play them.
I feel like this happens every year.
Yeah, like some kid...
I feel like every single year, without fail, there is like, my car got towed while I was at this tournament. Like, I think this is like four straight years this has happened to somebody.
It's the harsh reality that these kids are like college students at the end of the day. It was the classic, like, Luke May showed up to his 8 a.m. after, and then it's like...
Which...
That was stupid.
He didn't have to do that.
No.
Why did
he
do that?
He didn't have to show up to class for a week.
Why did
he
do that?
He did that for
the... You don't have to show up to class ever.
No, they have a fake major for their basketball players. They don't have to.
My favorite thing in the world is when the NCAA ruled, well, we couldn't really get North Carolina in trouble for impermissible benefits because they let regular students take the fake classes too.
It's honestly a genius move.
Like the best workaround I've ever heard.
Yeah, it is. It's almost respectable. It's almost a respectable level of cheating.
Did you see Tom Izzo after the game? He said, "I want to get in a cab and I want to eat one of those big slices of pizza."
Yeah?
It's a man of the people.
Okay, Tom.
I want to do the same thing, Tom.
I like Tom Izzo, man. It's hard to hate that guy.
Yeah. I'm trying so hard to get to New York, Sam.
What about like a miracle like NHL parlay or something in these first couple? Or NIT?
I've been hammering the NIT and I've been doing well.
What are your thoughts on the NIT? Like, do you feel a little disrespectful to the NCAA tournament gambling on the NIT?
No. It's free money.
I refuse to watch the NIT until nothing is on. Like, until only NIT basketball is on, like tonight. Yeah.
I'll gamble on women's basketball, too. But, yeah, I'm trying to get to New York. I think I might go just for the weekend. My bad from the weekend is the Big Ten. 8 teams in the tournament, and by the time you get to the second weekend, there's only one left. Michigan State, the last Big Ten team standing, and it's another year of disappointment. All their top teams seem to find a way to lose. Purdue obviously getting upset by Fairleigh Dickinson. Just a bad, bad, bad weekend for the Big Ten yet again. And I think it's gotten to the point where it's officially a problem. You know, these teams are going to have to change the way they go about it, whether they change up their non-conference scheduling just to play different types of teams to get those different looks. Maybe they just kind of change the way stylistically they're built. I think Purdue might have to take a long look in the mirror and say, hey, do we still want to try to play 4 average guards around the tallest person we can find every year, or do we want to, you know, switch things up? That one Carson Edwards team that wasn't centered around a big man did pretty well.
Yeah. Makes you think.
Tough weekend for the Big Ten. Sam, the ugly from the weekend?
My ugly. Touched on a little bit earlier, but the FAU attempted windmill dunk at the buzzer. Elijah Martin, disrespectful. You just can't do it. You know, you're up big. You've already won the game. You're playing the 16 seed, the Cinderella story. Let the guys have their moment, kind of. You know, maybe let FDU put in like a 60-year senior or something like that on the end of the bench or something, and then you just got guys going down the end of the court and trying to pull off a windmill dunk for no reason. It's a great sign for Tennessee. Basketball gods hate them. Crowd is booing.
I mean, I think when FDU, when they put their hands up and say, hey, we're done fouling, when they're done putting any pressure on the ball, then you dribble it out. You know, if they would have still pressed you and you beat the press, even if they didn't foul, if you wanted to go dunk it, I mean, cool, bro. You're sick. You're dunking on a 16 seed. We respect you. Like,
yeah, you didn't just knock off a one seed.
I mean, if they would have taken down, yeah, like
if you took down Bama there, yeah, do it.
Yeah, dunk all over them. You know, even if you just would have beat like a blue blood, like Duke team that was like a 5 seed or something. Sure, go dunk, but. Congrats, you beat the 298th best team in the country. Yeah, nice miss dunk. My ugly from the weekend, Tennessee baseball.
Yeah.
Going to Missouri and getting swept and really not even being competitive. Missouri was just able to jump on you from the start. They had a great game plan, a great approach from their hitters, and I thought they pitched Tennessee really well too. And tomorrow we're going to really dive into that, spend a segment or two talking about Tennessee baseball, what went wrong, where do you go from here, but – I'll go ahead and throw it in the ugly. Hey, sometimes it's your own. Tennessee baseball.
Yeah, not the best.
Ugly this weekend.
Not the best.
Well, we got about 6 minutes left. We'll just pass over this last break. We'll head over to the Big Orange Philly phone lines real quick because Jay's calling and haven't heard from Jay, so I would like to, you know, be able to hear from Jay before we hit the road today. So we'll go ahead and head over to the Big Orange Philly phone lines and squeeze this call in. Jay, how you doing today?
Hey, guys. I'll try to be quick here. I thought it was a great first weekend. I thought what was so amazing, I didn't realize till last night, you know, FDU has about three or four players that were playing Division II ball and transferred over to FDU. Some of their best players.
Yeah, they were St. Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah. I mean, that's a remarkable story. That number two, I mean, the guy who was just killing FAU, he was a Division II player.
That's the fastest basketball player I think I've ever seen. He was so
could he not
fast.
Could he not be our starting point guard right now because Zakai's hurt? I mean, would he not be starting for us?
I mean, I don't know about that just because drawn out over the course of the year, I mean, there's still a reason like this was the 298th best team in the country. But if you're telling me he's going to play exactly like he did the last two nights, I'll sign up for that.
Yeah, exactly.
What a run. I was kind of glad they lost because they're from New Jersey. We're going to be playing them in Madison Square Garden. That whole arena would be going against us.
That's a good point.
If we had to play them.
Yeah, I mean, just mentally it's like a weird kind of edge. And then, yeah, absolutely. All of MSU would have rooted against you. Everyone.
You know, I've heard about Tennessee. I've been hearing some stuff, you know, what do the haters have to say now and all this kind of stuff. And because there's been people that have been critical of Barnes and his March performances and stuff like that. I think some of the March criticism for Barnes, it was warranted. I was critical of it. I thought, you know, we got to do more than just get out of the first weekend. And he did, and credit to them, man. I mean, I don't think we've ever seen a clear path to the Final Four for Tennessee, which is just remarkable. I never would have thought that would have happened. But to me, it just highlights what people were saying. March, fair or unfair, is everything in college basketball. It can wipe away a mediocre season, and it can wipe away a great season if you don't do well. I mean, what do you think those Purdue people are going to remember? That they're the defending, or that they're the two-time regular season and tournament Big Ten champs, or that they got beat by FDU? They're going to remember that they got beat by FDU. That's what they're going to remember about this season. And it's what I've been saying. You know, March is just, it's kind of unfair, but everything really in college basketball, you're really judged on what you do in March. And it's why Izzo's had plenty of years like this year where he's coming in that seventh, eighth, ninth seed, and he makes a deep run, and nobody cares. You know, I mean, it's like, who cares what he did in the regular season? He's playing late into March, and so, you know, I think it's awesome, but you also have to remember this is why this tournament is so important, and this is why some Tennessee fans were like, we got to do better than just, you know, 20-win regular seasons and then getting bounced in the first weekend. And I think that's what this tournament highlights.
Yeah, you say, you know, this tournament isn't fair, and, I mean, yeah, absolutely. This tournament is a terrible way to figure out who the best teams are. In actuality, when you take a sport that should be played in a series and you just play these one-off games in these strange environments, you know, it isn't fair, but you're right. I mean, it has the ability to wipe away a season. It has a way to make a bad season feel good. I think there's an in-between, too. Like, I think if you have a good season and lose in, you know, the Sweet 16, like, second round, you can still hang on to some of the good season while also still having a bad taste in your mouth. Or, you know, if you have an all right season but you get through to the Sweet 16, you know, I still don't think it wipes away the bad season, but it feels a little bit better. But, no, I mean, you're right. March just is so important. And, you know, I think there has been a lot of fair criticism of Barnes. I think there's been some unfair criticism of Barnes too. But, you know, if the whole high haters, if the whole what do the haters have to say now thing is something that can give this team extra motivation and extra chip on their shoulder, I'm all for it.
Hey, if it gets us to the Final Four, I said if Barnes gets to one Elite Eight, I will never say another word about him. Not a Final Four. If he gets to one Elite Eight, I will never say another thing about Barnes the rest of his time here. I got nothing else to say.
Well, Jay, we're just one win away, and it feels like every
it's been a great season
until Thursday at 9.
Getting to the Sweet 16
feels like an hour.
Getting to the Sweet 16, great season. Great season. I know we lost 6 of our last 10, but you know what? We're in the Sweet 16, so who cares?
Amen. Amen.
You know, who cares?
Well, good to hear from you,
great,
Jay.
Great season, guys. Thanks.
Appreciate you calling in. Good to hear from you. Got to wrap up here now, 11:56. Coming to an end. Sam, do you have any best bet you wanted to squeeze in last minute? Anything you just really liked?
I'll go, let's get a little weird. Let's go Japan -2.5 run line against Mexico tonight.
Oh, really?
In WBC.
I already have Mexico.
You have
money
Mexico?
Line. I have Mexico money line, yeah.
That sucks. You've got Mexico money line, +205.
Yeah, I do.
Who's pitching? I don't know who's pitching for Mexico.
Don't need to know. All you need to know is Joey Meneses, future MVP, Washington Nationals legend. My best bet tonight is Duke -7 in the women's tournament. I'm going to be betting some women's basketball tonight, but that'll do it for us today. Again, Jay, thanks for calling in on the Big Orange Philly phone lines. But for Sam Beard, I'm Charlie Collier. Y'all have a good one. John Reed, Talk Sports, they're up next.